When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to According To. I'm Megan.
And I'm Sierra.
For this week's episode, Megan and I thought it'd be fun to discuss some of our favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, Sierra and I love watching movies. Like, if we're a, it's honestly hard. I was going to say, if we're a TV show versus movie person, then I had to pause because I was like, actually, what am I? Because I actually maybe don't know.
I don't know.
But nonetheless, there are some people who really cannot stand watching movies because they don't have, like, the
attention span
to watch them. But if it's a good movie, I absolutely am all in. I love going to movie theaters still.
Love the theater.
Like, movie theaters are a lost art, and we need to get back to them. So I'm very excited about this episode. We kind of came up with just a random list of movies that automatically come to mind for, like, our favorite movies ever. But then also, we went through and looked at just some, like, highly rated movies. And if they rung true in our minds of, like, oh, that's a really good movie, we added those down as well. So I think we have 16 movies total to talk about, and we kind of categorize them into a few different categories just so we have some organization to the podcast.
Yeah. Also, please realize, I feel like we're going to, like, get through this list and you're going to be like, those are your favorite movies?
I don't think any of these are probably Academy Award winners or anything like that.
No. So just go into it knowing that. I'm not someone who, like, don't get me wrong, I can appreciate, like, a good, well-made, well-thought-out, well-produced, well-edited, all the things. I can appreciate a movie like that, but as far as, like, my favorites and, like, the ones that I watch over and over, those aren't the ones. That's not what we're talking about.
It really just depends on how the movie makes you feel. So that's what we're focusing on today. Also, we are recording this in a car right now, so hopefully you don't hear any background noise. I think these microphones do a pretty good job of keeping it so you just hear us. But if something happens, just let it be known that we're currently in the car.
Our dad, we're staying at his house right now, and his brother's coming over, and they, like, have to do some work on stuff that might be potentially kind of loud. So,
and our dad just likes to jam the radio as soon as he gets home from work. And I, who am I to say, don't play music in your own house.
So we're in the car. We actually stopped at McDonald's beforehand. We got some frozen Coke slushies.
And we immediately were like, we should have gotten fries too.
I know. But honestly, it's probably better because we couldn't be, like, really eating during this anyways.
So then we'd just be, like, tempted.
Yeah. So maybe it's for the best. But anyways, before we get into the movies, let's talk about our weekly spotlight. Mine, I don't know what yours is, but it's related to a similar category, the Stranger Things release.
Stranger Things, yes.
Can we believe that it's been, like, since 2019? It's been almost 3 years since season 3 came out.
I honestly think the craziest thing is just seeing how much all the actors and actresses have aged since the original season.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't realize that it was, like, it was started in 2016, so then filming was before then. So that's, like, 7 years ago, probably. And when you're an actor who's, like, starting young, that's, like, you when you see, like, those change. Yeah. So it's really weird looking back at the flashbacks that are going on.
The actress that plays Lucas's sister, I was like, oh, my God. She looks so old now.
Yeah. Especially because we watched a season 1-3 recap before we started watching season 4, because to be honest, even though I've watched all Stranger Things seasons and episodes, I don't fully know what's going on.
Does anyone really, truly
idea of what's going on?
Like, if you had to explain it with, like, no help, and it was, like, just you, and no one has ever seen it, and you have to explain it, I feel like a lot of people couldn't. I really couldn't, except for just saying, there's these kids, and the Upside Down, and, like, bad things happen every season. I don't really quite know why.
Right. Because they're all, like, different but related, and it gets kind of confusing. I think we just finished watching the 4th episode in the 4th season. We're not going to share any spoilers or anything, but I think a lot of people know that it's definitely a different twist on Stranger Things. The first episode was jarring to me as a, you know, someone who's watched Stranger Things. It wasn't really what I was expecting.
The ending was just like, if you've watched it, you know. It was a little much.
But I think that since then, once you know, like, what they're planning on doing, you kind of get used to it, and, like, Sierra likes to do, and I do a little bit too, But I when certain moments happen, you just cover your eyes and then, like, okay, you're good to
the
go.
The sound effects are enough for me.
But I honestly, I think that it has been good. I don't know if it's going to top season 3 for me because season 3 is my favorite. I just loved the 80s mall vibe and it was not grotesque or anything or scary. And this one is just a little different. But I think it's still going to be good and I'm going to enjoy it.
I also loved season 3. Like Megan said, I loved the 80s mall vibe kind of things and like just the like style it was and the aesthetic of it. But I also just loved the different groups that it made of, like, here's Steven, Dustin, and, like, the, like, Robin, the ice cream people, like, doing their thing, like, sneaking to the mall, and they have, like, just the different groups that it made, and, like, how it all came together at the end. I was like, this is a masterpiece.
Sometimes, though, I will say, I think Stranger Things has a tendency to, like, it always does things in groups, and then, like, it takes forever for all the characters to, like, round back together. And sometimes I wish they wouldn't do that, because, like, you want all the characters to, like, be interacting together, and they just never do that.
Yeah, I think that's true, but unfortunately, with, like, how many different plot points they want, like, you can't have them all
together.
They all
need to be, like, doing different things.
Yeah, because then, hopefully, this season, I would love if it, like, merged together at some point. I feel like I love that kind of storytelling where it's, like, this is going on, this is going on, this is going on. And then at the end, it's, like, it all just, like, ties together nicely.
That just reminded me of, like, Outer Banks when, in the second season, when, like, they're separate, but then all of a sudden, like, you're seeing, like, a street chase and then like the two different groups just like run into each other.
It's very early on in the second season, but yeah.
Well, I know, but okay, so
is that your spotlight or do you have anything else?
My weekly spotlight was we went to the lake for Memorial Day weekend and the weather wasn't great, so that's not my spotlight per se, but I love a 3-day weekend, so that in itself, especially now that we are on clinicals for, you know, a normal work week now, the 3-day weekend was nice, and then thus a 4-day work week this week. And we played a lot of Trivial Pursuit, which I don't know why. I literally never play Trivial Pursuit unless we're at the lake, but I love playing it at the lake. So we did a lot of that when the weather was not great.
We're always, like, at the lake. We're always in a gamey mood. Not the meat, but actual games. Because we don't usually do this anymore, because I don't know if they have cable at the lake anymore. But it would be Game Show Network 100% of the time, the only thing that was not on TV. At the lake. And so we'd always,
unless our grandma got the remote, and then she would always change it to the Hallmark Channel. Grandma, and be like,
no one watches this but you. And then we'd always be watching America Says, Family Feud. There's like this other game that I can't remember right now, but so it made sense that in times of need we turned to Trivial Pursuit, which I must say, I don't know why we have 4 different Trivial Pursuit games at our lake house, but we do. The one that we had been playing prior to, I think like a couple summers ago, we were playing Trivial Pursuit, and it was like this really old version of the game where the questions were extremely dated, which meant Megan and I had absolutely no shot, and our grandparents were occasionally correct. And I also think I looked at it and it said like Genius Edition on it, so it was just, you know, it made you feel dumb, and you're like, this is stupid. So then we got a more recent game that we were playing this weekend, and it's a lot
It definitely
easier.
Shows, because a lot of times beforehand, we wouldn't even finish the game because no one was getting enough pieces. And this time around, there was pretty much a winner, like, every single game. And then also, most players had, like, multiple pie pieces. So it went to show that the questions were a little bit more suited to us.
I used to just think I was too dumb for Trivial Pursuit. I was like, they're too hard. But the game was just too old. So there you go. Weather was okay, but yeah. Should we do a book update quickly?
We could. I'm not sure what my last update was.
I know that I've at least read one more book. I read the first Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book since I ended up getting, I think I might have mentioned this either on the podcast or
I think I did. So.
So I got the book that had the 5 books from that series. I read the first one. It's only like 140 pages. So like once I got into the swing of it, I was like, okay, I'm just going to finish it because it's not that long, so. I liked it. I think that I saw a review that I agreed with, and the book is fun, but I feel like, honestly, more than anything, it's, like, the author, like, kind of inserting himself and, like, making himself feel clever, which you probably don't get what I mean, but, like, if you do read it, you would understand what I mean. Like, you can just, like, tell it's, like, the author is, like, inserting himself into the story.
Okay.
But it was good. I liked it. It was a very dry sense of humor. So, you have to be, like, in the mood for that. Like, I was looking, it was not Project Hail Mary, is what I'm saying. which is fine, but it just wasn't.
So I'm currently in the middle of reading two books, kind of, because I shelved the one book that I was reading. And if you guys have read this book and you enjoyed it, I need someone to convince me to keep going with it. I'm only, like, 20 pages into The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. And I don't know if I just haven't been, like, cognitively there as I've been reading it, or, like, there's been a couple times where I'm, like, too tired, so I start reading it, and then I'm, like, falling asleep, so then I have no idea what's going on. But the writing style is a little bit different. It's as if they do not use the word at all.
I tried reading the first page, and I was like, does the word not exist?
And then I just feel like it throws you in immediately into this different world. I'm pretty sure they're on a different planet, but, like, it gives no background or, like, extra information, so I'm just kind of lost a little bit. So I need to build myself back up to try to finish that one. But I started reading The Moment I Met You, which is a romance. I'm like 100 pages into it, and I'm enjoying it so far. I think it's going to be a little bit different kind of romance than what I normally read, but I think it'll be fun and interesting, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Sometimes I think the interesting thing with romances is that you have, like, this typical romance that you read, and so if you, like, read something that's not quite the same, then, like, it can be good, but it throws you off because it's not what you're expecting.
Right.
Which, like, objectively, the book could be good anyways, but sometimes if you want a romance, it can be frustrating if you're like, this is not, like, the romance that I was looking for.
Yeah, it's taking a little bit longer just to get into it because I feel like it's giving a lot of background. It's also, I think, supposed to be, like, second chance romance between, like, the main character and her boyfriend, but then also the summary precursor thing already, like, alludes to someone else being there, so I'm like, it might be a love triangle or, like, a second chance in another sense with someone else in the book. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Okay, I think that about wraps it up for all of our precursors. Let's get into our movies.
Okay, so the first category that we have, we decided to call Bad But Good. And what we mean by that is that these movies are in no way, shape, or form big budget box office hits that were meant to change cinematography and filmmaking as we know it.
But I think they're cult classics. Like, they definitely, like, when we say these, I feel like a lot of you are going to be like, me too. Yes, me too. Love that. So, first one.
First one is National Treasure. And this includes, like, the first one, the second one. If they ever wanted to make a third one, I'm sure it would fit in as well.
I am dying for them to make a third one. Anyways, I'm going to assume, like, we'll give backgrounds for something that you may not have seen, but I feel like most of you would probably have seen National Treasure. If you haven't, it's available on Disney Plus, so I'd highly recommend you check it out. But basically, it's a cult classic. Like, I genuinely, when I watch it, I can just about, like, say the lines that they're saying.
Yeah. I feel like we should give, if we can, just a brief summary if people haven't seen it. So, yeah. Basically, the premise of the movie is Nicolas Cage is the star of the show, and he's an interesting actor just
in general.
And so the idea is his family is kind of, like, known for being treasure hunters, and so something happens where his grandpa is blamed for, like,
you're on the wrong movie.
That's on the second one.
Yeah.
Basically,
it's just he's a treasure hunter.
And he's trying to find treasure, and it goes through a bunch of historical type of clues and stuff, and they go from one place to the next based off of the clues that they're finding.
Yeah. The big thing for the first movie is that he's working with another treasure hunter who then, like, eventually, in the beginning of the movie,
backstabs
him, tries to kill him, and then they're both, like, trying to find the same treasure, but they're fighting against each other now in terms of who can get there first. And so they both realize that at some point, like, they need the Declaration of Independence in order to get the next clue for the treasure. So at first, Ben, which is Nick Cage's character, he's like, well, no, we can't do that. And then his other guy is like, well, I'm going to. So then Ben's like, well, okay, now I have to. So they don't. So he's like, I have to steal the Declaration, like, of Independence.
They're
going to
destroy
it
if they get it versus I will preserve and protect it.
Yeah.
So that's how he justifies it.
And then from there, obviously, like, it's just the battle between the two of them trying to get the treasure first. Obviously, the Declaration gets stolen. That adds another layer. And the FBI starts getting involved. It ends with a treasure being found.
I feel like, hot topic, which National Treasure is better? I know Sierra just told me she thinks the first one is better.
And I used to be team two.
I love the first one. I really do. But I kind of think I would say that I think the second one is better. Just because I feel like there's a little bit, it's more like worldwide, and I enjoy that aspect of it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like more happens. So,
yeah. I can respect that.
The more you
watch
the movies, also, you realize just like not that much happens, but like you still enjoy it.
Like, I used to be, I used to think that the second National Treasure movie was better. But then I feel like I just repeatedly, when I would want to turn one on, I'd always turn the first one on. And I think that's also, like, why, like, if you turn the second one on, I might know a few lines, but not the same.
I don't know all of them. I can, like, recite the first movie. Like, I know so many of the lines, or, like, the gist of the lines.
Sierra's definitely more of, like, a comfort movie watcher.
Oh, yeah.
I exclusively watch comfort movies.
I refer to, like, comfort TV shows or just, like, background TV shows because it's, like, less of a commitment to me than, like, a full movie.
You know what I do it for, though? I, like, if I'm doing a task but I want to be entertained, I'll turn on a comfort movie and try to have, like, the end of the movie be my deadline of, like, now I'm done with that task.
Okay.
And so, obviously, I'm not going to turn on a movie that I haven't seen if I'm doing something. So, I just have seen these movies so many times. Anything else about National Treasure? I love the characters. Riley Poole, like, everyone loves the nerdy little sidekick. I love, I almost said Ben Stiller. I love Nick Cage's character. Abigail. She's the female character in the movie. And I just think it's fun, like, I mean, I don't know if this is, like, exclusively related to, like, us liking escape rooms, but I really just appreciate just, like, the riddle aspect of things and how it just, like, makes sense. Like, I appreciate that aspect to movie, which that was my gripe with. We just saw the movie Uncharted, a few weeks ago or last week or something.
It was a little too far from the audience.
The leaps were a little bit too much. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think it's, if you like National Treasure, it's a similar vibe. But part of what I like National Treasure for is, like, the riddles, even though they're fake, like, they make sense with the answers that it comes up with. Like, oh, like, the Liberty Bell, blah, 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 like, and you can kind of, like, make that leap with them. Whereas in
Uncharted was, like, something that would never freaking happen. Which, like, yeah. would National Treasure happen? No, but, like, Uncharted was, like, to the next level.
Well, I'm not even just talking about, like, the action. I'm talking about, like, the riddles would be, like, oh, well, obviously it's this. And I'm like, what? Like, the tree thing? I was like, okay. Anyways, if you haven't seen that, I won't jump into it. It's not included in the list, but it was good. But
okay, the next movie is, I feel like, I don't know if this is just how Sierra and my mind works, but it's
adjacent to
National Treasure, which is Night at the Museum. I honestly feel like these movies simply go hand in hand. So if you like one, you like the other. Nicolas Cage is essentially Ben Stiller. Like, they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's historical related, and, you know, they're trying to accomplish a task.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I don't really even know if I need to say much more. A museum comes to life, and the main character, Ben Stiller, whatever his character's name is, he needs to get a job, so he becomes a night security guard at a museum, and then every night the museum comes to life and he's like, whoa, what's going on? And then he realizes there's, like, people or things in the museum that are trying to, like, get something else.
The other security guards in the first movie that are trying steal. That, like, one's not King, the
no there's Ockman multiple Ra. Night at the museums
too. Do you remember that? King Ockman
no
Ra?
I remembered it.
Okay, was that the good guy or the bad guy in the second movie?
I don't even remember. Good guy.
Anyway, they're trying to steal a tablet that, like, keeps them coming to life every night. And so then they're like, well, we're gonna die, kind of. So don't let them steal it. So that's the premise of the movie. I think it's a lot of fun. I just love, like, a classic battle between good and bad. And it's also just, like, these are lighthearted movies. And sometimes that's fun. Like, it keeps things light, keeps things funny. Some slapstick humor, which I'm normally not a fan of. But if it's from a monkey, then I will accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the two, what's Owen Wilson's character? Jebediah or something? Jedediah? And then the other guy who plays, like, the Roman gladiator that I don't know the actor's name, but I like them in the movie, too.
Isn't that Rami Malek?
No, that's the
mummy guy.
Yeah. Can you believe he went from that to, was it Academy nominated? I don't know if it won anything. Queen.
Impressive. Okay, we have one last movie in our bad but good category. And is this the best category for it? I don't know, but we didn't have, like, an action category, so it ended up here anyways.
Well, I think if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes, it probably says it's bad.
Really?
I bet so. You talk about it, I'll look it up.
So the next one is Nonstop. It is a movie where Liam Neeson stars in it, and I simply think this movie is so good because of the feeling that I had when I first watched it. It's basically about a plane getting hijacked, and so you're trying to figure out, like, this person is sending the main character, Liam Neeson, who is the flight marshal, different texts kind of saying, it seems like it's a prank at first, but then people end up showing up dead on the plane, and then it keeps saying, like, next person's gonna die in however much time, and then people keep dying, and Sierra's showing me the Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, so maybe people won't like this. It's a 62% Rotten Tomato score, and then 63% audience score, which still means more than half the people liked it. But I personally was really interested and wanted to know what was happening and see if I could figure out who was behind all the stuff going on in the plane. So it was kind of like a whodunit in that sense. And the reason I loved it so much was because I literally had no idea who ended up actually being. Like, I was just so caught off guard, and I thought that they did a really good job with the reveal. So that was what I really enjoyed about it. I also think that I know a lot of movies do this where, like, it's suspenseful when it's like, oh, in this amount of time, like, the next person's gonna die, but, like, each person and how they died just, like, kept getting,
because, like, well, there's no way they're gonna do it again,
right? So that happened in a different way every single time. So I was just captivated the whole time I was watching the movie.
Yeah. I will say, like, if you are trying to kind of play along like Megan and I do with those kinds of whodunit movies, like, if you were to figure out who did it, then you would maybe be like, oh, like, that wasn't well done. So I could understand how maybe if you're just smarter and more perceptive than we are, how you'd be, like, disappointed if you figured it out. But, like, for me, I literally didn't figure it out until they were doing the reveal, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. And that same kind of thing is what made Silent Patient such a good book to me. Like, I literally did not know who the person was until I was reading it on the page.
And it's wild. I had never read a plot twist before.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like that. It was crazy. It's another little book shout out, but you guys have heard of The Silent Patient by now from us.
Okay, so next movie category is drama and mystery. I think the movies in this category might be the ones that almost have to be at the top of my list, simply because these ones, I think, have the some respect more critical of acclaim. Good cinematography and good filmmaking going on with the movies. And so just because of that, I think they're automatically going to be ranked higher, and more people are probably going to like them and appreciate them. So we have four movies listed in this category. So we'll start with Knives Out. And Sierra King.
Knives Out. First of all, it birthed my Chris Evans celebrity crush, which you'd think I would have seen more movies with him in it. I genuinely can't think of any other movies I've seen him in, but the crush is still there. I tried watching Captain America, but you guys know how that went. Megan and I love a whodunit, and it's a well
It was also just like a very star-studded cast for the most part, which is always fun to see all of those actors that you know a lot of them, and then all of a sudden, like, they're all together in the same movie. And then the premise essentially was, like, this rich old guy ends up dying. He was murdered. They're trying to figure out who in the family did it.
Well, what's crazy, Megan and I saw this in theaters, and we were like, okay, this is a whodunit. We watched, like, the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie. We turned to each other and we're like, I thought this was a whodunit.
It shows what happened to the guy that died. So then you're just like, I'm confused. But then there still is a,
like,
twist.
It is a whodunit.
So also just, like, the cinematography, the cast, like, that's what made the movie all come together.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the acting. And when, like, the pieces start to fall into place, like, the reveal is kind of coming on, then you're like, oh, like, all the details that, like, were snuck in seemingly for no reason of, like, oh, I'm not going to give any spoilers because I don't want you guys to pay attention to it if you haven't seen it. But, like, there's things that you can kind of turn back to that happened earlier in the movie that you're like, oh, that's how, like, that clicked in over here. So if you're trying to solve it and you're watching this movie for the first time, pay very close attention and you might be able to do it. But, yeah. Is there anything else about that? I also think, like, the guy that played the detective, the guy that plays James Bond, what is his name? Megan won't know.
Don't ask me.
I don't remember off the top of my head right now. But I thought it was, like, really smart to have him as the detective, just because I feel like he was James Bond, so, like, even though I haven't seen James Bond, like, he had that, like, detective-like authority that I was like, oh, yeah. And so, very good movie. Would highly recommend.
This next one is arguably my favorite movie just because I've been raving about it so much, but it's The Martian, and it stars Matt Damon, which I love him as an actor anyways. But what I think I realized, too, and I didn't appreciate this until I read Project Hail Mary, because if you aren't aware, The Martian is based on a book which is written by Andy Weir. And he also wrote Project Hail Mary. And he has such a knack for making a book about essentially one person so fun, so vivid. He makes such likable main characters, which is what makes the movies and the books.
You would think that any author who's, like, writing a book, you'd be like, well, yeah, you like the characters that you're reading about. But when I, like, look back on reading Project Hail Mary, yeah, like, the science fiction is cool and it's fun, but, like, it's the relationship between the characters that, like, gets you pulled in. So I don't know how he does it. I imagine that he must be just as charismatic and likable in person if he can write about characters that well. But, like, it's just the relationship and, like, the introspection that, like, is their thoughts kind of coming out onto paper, in this case, for The Martian, the movie, like, just on screen.
Yeah.
It's so well done.
Yeah. I feel like The Martian is an extremely popular movie, but quick synopsis. Essentially, Matt Damon's character is on Mars with a bunch of his team. They're getting ready to go back, I think shortly, but, like, not immediately. But then there's a Martian storm that happens where they have to leave, like, right now. But Matt Damon ends up getting left behind on Mars. They think he died, and he did not. So then it's about him trying to survive and live on Mars with no communication at all, pretty much no resources.
And he's the botanist.
He's the botanist. So, you know, you wouldn't think he could make it, but I love the problem solving that takes place and seeing, you know, him get connection with people back on Earth. They're all trying to problem solve together. Back on Earth, it's the storyline of world, like, everyone in the world internationally coming together trying to figure out a solution to make this work. They eventually do figure out
that he was left on Mars based off of, like, some satellite
images. And then it's,
like,
the storyline of, you know, people that were on the ship trying to figure out, once they're told, like, do they come back to Earth? Do they go back to get him? And, like, the friendships with that. And then also the scene at the climax of the movie gets me in tears almost every time. So
it's that powerful.
And just, again, it's one of those movies that was high budget, so good production. Yeah.
I also like that movie. Probably haven't seen it as many times as
I literally
has,
like,
but
when we went to Hawaii, I watched it, like, twice, just straight in a row, because I was, like, looking
through
those
movies. That was so good. Let's do it again.
And I was like, I'd honestly just rather watch The Martian again.
All right.
What's the next one? The next one in the drama mystery category is Just Mercy.
Okay, so I've only seen this movie one time, but I did read the book that the movie is based on, which I'd also recommend if you... This is, like, also just, like, a dual book recommendation
thing.
But we're focusing on movies. It's just some context and... What's the word I'm looking for? Like, in middle school when you're, like, connecting the dots? Text to a movie? Text to world? I don't know. Anyways, what movie is this?
Just Mercy.
Okay.
Starring Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. One, it's got Michael B. Jordan. So that in itself would get anyone excited. Two, it's basically about Michael B. Jordan plays this lawyer who, I don't remember how he gets involved exactly with, like, more, is it specifically death row cases or just...
I believe so.
Okay. So it's people who are on death row and he wants to relook at their cases and see if there's any way, like, they can get, like, a change in conviction so they don't have to be put to death. And, like, they look at the cases to see if there's any, like, misplaced evidence or just, like, any unfairness that took place during the trial. And so it's just a very powerful movie. And
it's a very emotional movie. Like, literally, there's one scene where it's following an inmate on death row, like, to their execution, I guess. And it literally is, like,
tears.
So emotional.
Like, I was, like, legit, like, crying.
And that does not happen very often. Like, tears sometimes, sure, but, like, literally just, like, crying when you're watching a movie does not happen often. So it was just a very powerful movie, emotional, heartwarming at times.
Mm-hmm. You know what else I have to say? I didn't think to put this on our list, but I feel like it could kind of fit in this category. I don't know if I would say it's, like, all-time favorite, because I've only seen it one time, but I'm going to say A Star is Born. Meg and I went and saw that in theaters when it first came out. And that was another movie that, like, I legit was crying at the end. Megan wasn't. I was like, are you not sad? But I hadn't seen, like, any of the other A Star is Born movies. So I didn't know any of, like, the plot beforehand. But that movie had me in some tears at the end. So if you haven't seen that, I would also recommend it.
Okay, and then the last one we have in this category is Patriots Day, which is starring Mark Wahlberg. This
Hold came on, out. Pause. Does anyone else always mix up Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg for no reason?
That's why I paused before I said Matt Damon when I was describing The Martian. This movie is about the Boston bombings. I think it came out, I mean, it came out a couple years ago. That's all I need to say. The thing that I think, I mean, this is a pretty high budget movie as well. Mark Wahlberg's a great actor. He's very popular.
Did you have to pause again to make sure you said this the right one?
And the thing that really, I think, took this movie to the next level for me was because this was based on a true story. And I know this probably isn't unique to things that are based on true stories. A lot of things do include, you know,
like real reenactment media
stuff, but then also real media stuff. But I just felt like the way they were put together in this movie was very powerful, and it was done extremely well. And, I mean, when a movie pulls at my emotions like this one did, it automatically just, like, ranks up higher towards the top for me. And so that was, I think, what really made this movie unique, different, was that it incorporated both of those.
Mm-hmm. I think since, obviously, like, Mark Wahlberg has... Now I'm, like, trying to make sure I'm, like, using the right one. Since he's, like, from the Boston area, has, like, that accent, like, him getting to play up that accent, it's just, like, you can tell he's, like, from the area. So I think it makes the character that much more authentic when he's playing the police officer there.
Yeah.
So, and again, like you said, just really good movie, really well done. I think it's sometimes difficult to, like, do some sort of, like, historical event, even though it's, like, it's not even that old. Like, it's not that old of an event that happened. So there's a lot of pressure on it to do the whole thing well, like, to do
justice
everyone,
to the story.
Yeah, the justice to the story of everyone who's affected. And so I think it accomplished that, and I think it was a great movie.
Okay, on to this next category only has one in it because, surprisingly, even though romance is our favorite genre of book to read, we do not watch rom-coms hardly ever. They're just, like, not the first thing I choose to put on TV.
And, like, not to say that I wouldn't enjoy it. I just, like, don't watch them a ton.
Yeah. So, for the rom-com category, only one movie made it, and it's How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Mostly because, like, I've watched, you know, a rom-com or two here or there. I haven't seen a lot of them. But this one, for some reason, to me, I don't fully know why. Maybe it's just because it has Matthew McConaughey. And I was like,
sold.
But this one was just one that, like, stood out to me, where it's like I actually have rewatched this rom-com and I'm like, it's enjoyable. I like the characters a lot in it.
For 2 months, this is, like, kind of recently because I actually did watch the movie a couple months ago, but I was like, for months, Megan, where can I watch this movie again? Because I didn't remember how we watched it the first time. We actually might have rented it on YouTube or something the first time, but I didn't want to do that again. So I was like, where can I watch this for free? And I think it's on Tubi or, like, one of those free streaming services. If you are also looking, it might have been on that. I don't know. It's a free one.
The premise of it is basically, Kate Hudson.
I just watched it.
Kate Hudson is a magazine editor, and she writes articles and stuff. And then
she's the how-to girl.
Yeah. And Matthew McConaughey is,
I don't remember what his job was exactly. Advertising or something.
I don't know.
I think it was like advertising.
Whatever.
But he wanted to get out of sports and into the diamond realm, because I think that's where the money is. And Kate's character, who I don't remember any movie characters' names ever, she was like, I don't want to be like the how to, like, apply your lipstick girl. Like, I want to write hard-hitting journalism pieces. And her boss is like, if you write, like, one more really good piece, then, like, after this you can write whatever you want, or something to that effect. I don't really remember. And then there's, like, this back and forth. Her friend's, like, going through a breakup and having a hard time, like, figuring out how to keep a guy. And so when she's asked to pitch her next idea, she's like, oh, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And it's going to, like, go through everything that a girl does wrong when she first starts dating a guy, and, like, why he goes running for the hills. And so it's going to be, like, she's going to try and date a guy.
It's inspired by her best friend, who is, like...
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry.
So basically she's like, I'm going to, like, do, like, a what not to do, basically. And so she would actually go on a date with a guy and try and do all these things to, like, annoy him and, like, get him to stop seeing her. So it'd be, like, be clingy, be gross, be annoying, whatever. And then on the flip side, Matthew McConaughey trying to get into the diamond marketing realm. He is told, like, okay, if you can make a girl fall in love with you, because, like, you know, diamonds are the language of love. Like, if you can make a girl fall in love with you, which, like, is weird, but whatever, it's a movie, then we'll give you this, I don't know, advertisement or whatever it was. And so how they get involved is that the two women that Matthew McConaughey's character is competing against for that advertisement slot had previously just been over at the magazine company that Kate Hudson's character works at, and they knew the premise of her article. And so they're like at the same bar at the same time or something. So they're like, oh, make that girl fall in love with you. It's Kate Hudson's character. And so they know that she's like trying to get rid of whatever guy she dates next. And so they're like, he'll never win the bet, and like make her fall in love with him. And romance ensues.
Okay. The rest of our list is separated into two different categories, but the rest of them are animations. We just felt like there's kind of a lot still. Like, we have 8 movies still that we're going to talk about, and we didn't feel like they all should fit into one category. So we split it into classics, kind of, and then other animation that are not so much classics and a little bit
more. They're like the underground classics in my mind.
Yeah.
Not like underground, but...
So the classics are kind of, for the most part, like Disney Pixar related. Actually, all of them are. So that might be the separation. So first one we have, I will let Sierra take the floor. It is Hercules.
Okay. This is my TED Talk. Hercules is my all-time favorite Disney movie. And I was someone, like, it didn't become my, like, it's not like my childhood favorite. So, like, I can take that bias out of it. Because I would say when I was younger, my favorites would probably be Mulan. I was a Tangled girl for a while. And I honestly don't think it was until high school or college where I was like, I think Hercules is my favorite. I, one, love how, like, it's from the guy's perspective in a way. There's not, like, a ton of, you know, the Disney princess stuff. Like, I would say Aladdin and Hercules are about the only movies that, like, kind of highlight the male character more than the female character. So I think that brings, like, an interesting different dimension to the story than most of the other, like, Disney princess Pixar. Does Pixar make princess movies? Not really. The songs absolutely slap. Go the Distance. I literally have that
on Sierra's
on my Spotify. It is on my on repeat. And then the song that during his training montage, who doesn't love a training montage? And the song is good. And then, like, the scene when it, like, switches, like, he's growing older, and then he's, like, got the bicep flex and, like, the tape measure breaks, and, like, now he's new and improved Hercules. So I love that. I also, like, I loved Greek mythology, like, when I was in middle school and stuff, and so that kind of plays into it a little bit. And it's another movie I can pretty much recite, like, line for line. Like, I love it so much.
I like Hercules, but clearly not to that extent. The next one that I had on here was from Pixar, so Inside Out. I don't know what it is about Inside Out, but I think that to me, when I first saw the movie, I really liked the idea of the concept that they created for the movie of going inside the main character Riley's brain, and then here are all these animated characters that are playing her different emotions, and then the cleverness that they take in terms of, like, everyday things that people experience in their mind, and then showing what's going on in Riley's mind, and then showing how she's reacting on the outside, and then, you know, clever takes on, like, they have, like, the train of thought, stuff like that. I just really like seeing how they put that stuff together in a movie format to make it a fun movie. So, yeah.
You know, Shark Boy and Lava Girl is kind of like that.
A little bit, but
you hate that
I really
movie.
Do not like that movie.
I've only seen Inside Out one time. I think because Megan made me watch it because I hadn't seen it yet, and you're like, oh my god, I love this movie. It was good. I don't really, like, I remember it, but not that much of it. Like, I get I remember the characters and the plot a little bit. Honestly, what I would get bored with was, like, when it would show, like, the outside world. I was like,
yeah, I agree.
Don't care.
I agree.
So, yeah.
The next one we have is Coco, which is also Disney Pixar.
Coco, I mean, it's not underrated because it's very popular. But I think Meg and I had waited a while before we had decided to watch it.
And we heard so much hype around the movie that I just kind of was like, there's no way it's that good. It's just an animated movie.
And so then we watched it, I think at the lake house, for the first time is where we watched it. And I might have fallen asleep the first time we watched it and had to, like, finish it the next night. I don't remember.
Because I'm like, did I finish watching it? And then I was like, you have to finish watching it.
And so I finished watching it, I think, the next day. And it was, like, it's such a good movie. I think similar to Inside Out, it kind of plays on, like, that, the idea of, like, it's about the Day of the Dead. And so it just, like, has, this is, like, well, maybe this is what's actually happening, like, on the Day of the Dead. And they play into, like, you know, here's, like, this bridge of how people will cross over, like, people that have passed, and, like, I just, it has, like, the way of, like, I don't know how to verbalize this, but, like, a way of making, like, what we imagine might be happening for something like the Day of the Dead, like, it
into something more tangible.
Yeah.
And, like, visually, you have stuff to look at to say this is what's going on.
Yeah.
The premise of the movie is essentially on the Day of the Dead.
Another plot twist, too.
Yeah.
That it didn't see coming.
The main character, he's, like, a living character. He's trying to, you know, become a musician, but his family is for some reason very against music and doesn't want him to pursue that. And then he ends up crossing over into the Day of the Dead realm, and I honestly cannot remember why.
Well, he figures out that this famous musician, Ernesto, he figures out he was related to him, and so I think he goes and visits Ernesto's tomb or something to, like, find his guitar. I don't entirely remember also, but something happens where he, like, becomes undead. Like, he didn't actually die, but he's now
able to cross over into the other realm.
Land of the dead. Land of the living, land of the dead.
And then from there, he is meeting a bunch of people that have passed. He meets some old family. He starts trying to go on this quest for Ernesto, which is someone
Because they have to figure out, they have to get a blessing in order for him to, like, from a family member to, in order to, like, cross back to the land of the living. And like, his family members that he
family members.
Sees, they're like, no, you have to promise that you won't ever play music again. He's like, I don't want to promise that. So he's going to go and find Ernesto.
The musician.
To give him his blessing so he can still play music, but still also go back to the land of the living. And he meets someone else along the way who's, like, kind of helping him find Ernesto. More things happen. There's a plot twist in there. And it was a great movie. Great songs, too.
Yeah. Okay, last one in our classical kind of category.
Classical?
Is Mulan, which is also a Disney movie.
Oh, that I was think another that, one of my OG favorites.
I think that Mulan is probably my favorite Disney movie. I think the songs are top-notch.
If the songs slap, it's going to be up there.
And it also depends on, like, it's the scene that makes, like, such a big impact on you.
They have a training scene.
For example, the training scene that they have, the music that goes with
it. I'll make a man out of you. Like, oh, my God.
The montage of, like, the characters, like, dressing into, like, little female outfits so they can, take over the guards. The scene.
Shang showing up, slapping his own cape around it when he's like, I'm on your side now, at the end.
The scene where the, what are they called?
The Huns.
Where they're coming mountain edge. Like, that scene can literally give me chills.
Like, ah, they're screaming.
Yeah. That scene. So chills. It's like, those are the scenes that I can't, they're too good, where it just makes such a big impact on me that I'm like, that's amazing. That's a good movie.
Also, it's just fun, like, going against the general plot that most princess movies have. Obviously, Mulan is, like, the twist of, like, she doesn't want to be, like, the female character, like, looking for love. She wants to be the female character who, like, wants to go to war instead of her dad. And they're like, well, you can't do that. And so she goes anyways. How realistic that would actually be? Not very, but, you know, I appreciate the effort, and it's a great movie. That's all I have to say. Mulan.
That's after every single movie.
It's such a great movie.
Simply a great movie.
And then Mulan 2. I don't love it as much, but it's still good.
All right, we are on to our final category, which is just other animation.
Okay. First one, Meet the Robinsons. This is, like, one of those movies where it's, like, I feel like everyone forgets about it. I think a lot of people have seen it, obviously, but you, like, hear it again, you're like, oh my God, I need to watch that. Like, that's how I feel every time I, like, see it. I'm like, I should watch that, like, put that in my queue. So, if you're unfamiliar with Meet the Robinsons, basically it's about this boy who is dropped off at an orphanage when he was born by his mom, and he's, like, being raised in this orphanage, trying to be adopted by other families, but everyone that sees him and, like, meets him thinks he's weird. He tries to, like, invent these cool things because he likes to be an inventor. And they're like, we don't want that as our kid. Like, we want the baseball player, like, the, you know, jock, the athlete. And so he's struggling trying to find, like, his own identity because he wants to be adopted and, like, wants to have a family. And he decides, like, he's going to build a time machine so he can, like, see, like find his mom and, like, prevent her from dropping him off at the orphanage in the first place. Because I think that the orphanage lady was like, oh, like, she probably loved you. Like, she did it for, you know, your own good. And he was just like, she loved me. Like, I'll just make sure she didn't ever drop me off and then have a family. And so he invents this time machine to present at the science fair. And at the same time, there's this guy, bowler hat guy, who is in present day, which is the time that I'm talking about right now, trying to come and steal said time machine, which we don't know why.
From the future.
Yeah. The guy, bowler hat guy, is from the future. And so eventually, Lewis, that's the male character, the orphan, he meets this other younger guy from the future. His name is Wilbur. And Wilbur is like, hey, have you seen this boiler hat guy? Like, he's trying to steal your time machine, but I'm going to help make sure that he doesn't steal your time machine. And Wilbur ends up taking him to the future. I don't remember why they go to the future.
And it's this whole quest, essentially, to
yeah, now they're in the future.
Make sure that the future doesn't get messed up and things go how they're supposed to.
And then, in the meantime, since the Robinsons, that's Wilbur's family, Lewis, like, gets to meet all of them, gets to know them, and he, like, kind of feels like he belongs, and he's like, oh, like, I actually kind of have a family now, so he wants to stay in the future, but then the Robinsons are like, you can't, for some reason that you can't know yet, and so it's just, like, it's kind of a reveal at the end. I love a good movie with a reveal. I just, like, I love the characters. I think it's so fun. I think when you get to that reveal and things kind of, like, fall into place of, like, oh, okay, then it's a nice little, like, everything wraps up nicely in a little bow.
The next one we have is Shrek. And I think Shrek, like, the first one is the best movie. But, well, actually, no, that's a lie. The second one is it the second or is it?
Second.
Okay. That one's the best one. But Shrek as a whole, the entire series, I know people like Shrek. I don't think that's, like, a hot take or anything. But,
if you want, like, a true in-depth analysis.
I think that something that's so fascinating about Shrek and the movies is if you go watch this, I don't even know what channel it was, but if you look up some sort of,
like, Shrek video essay or something.
Video essay on YouTube, it is honestly, like, a pretty lengthy video of someone explaining the movie genius that is behind Shrek and its creators and how it's kind of, like, a slap in the face to Disney and Pixar and just going against the grain of everything that was supposed to make a quote-unquote good animated movie.
But then, like, also, like, becomes that,
exactly, because everyone ends up loving it so much.
Okay. It's called Why the Soundtrack to Shrek is Actually Genius, and it's created by this username called Sideways. It has 3.6 million views, so you won't miss it.
So, I think after I watched that, too, I mean, I've always liked Shrek, but after watching that, I grew, like, an even greater appreciation for it.
Here's another one that I also watched, Why Shrek Has Aged So Much Better Than Other Movies. So, you can tell, I've watched at least 2 Shrek video essays alone, and, like, it was, like, high-quality video content.
Like, it feels like you're not wasting your time, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Okay, we are down to our last 2 movies. These ones are probably going to be a little bit more Sierra-heavy, because I think she has stronger passions for them than I do. The first one is, not the first one, this is, you know, second to last in the list, but Zootopia.
So, Zootopia is, like, my version of Inside Out for Megan, because I swear I've seen this movie so many times, and Megan's only seen it, like, once.
And I have, like, so little memory of it.
It's so good, you need to watch it again. So, Zootopia follows the premise of this bunny rabbit, her name is Judy Hopps, and she decides that she wants to be a police officer when she grows up, but all the other animals laugh at her because she's a bunny, so she couldn't be a police officer, but she makes it her life's mission to do so. So she proves everyone wrong, becomes a police officer, and then when she moves to, like, Zootopia, the big city, she's like, okay, I'm ready to fight crime. Where do you need me? And they put her on parking duty. And so she's like, this is not quite what I thought it was going to be. And in the meantime, like, while she's doing her parking duty stuff, she meets this fox played by Jason Bateman. That's also, like, another reason why I love this movie. I love Jason Bateman in any, like, comedy role. And so he plays this fox. His name is Nick. And he's, like, a con man, basically. And so Judy, like, while she's doing her parking stuff, catches him, like, conning people. He even, like, cons her kind of to start. And so they kind of, like, build this bad blood but, like, friendship. You know, they're, like, enemies. it's enemies to lovers, basically, because they end up, like, dating at the end. But I shouldn't spoil that, but I feel like that's, it goes without saying. Anyways, they end up, like, coming together to, like, unmask this citywide crime scandal type of thing related to the predators in the city, because they're going, what do they call it? They're, like, going rogue, but it's not going rogue. They're, like, going wild or something. I don't know. And yeah, that's the premise of the movie. It's great. Have you seen that TikTok sound where it's like, sit back down, I'm sat? People have done that with the Fox's character, Jason Bateman's character, and like Loki. We could do that with like a ton of male characters, we said. Chris Evans, that also applies.
Okay, and last but not least, the final movie that we're going to shout out in this podcast episode is Robots.
So, Robots, I feel like, I do think most people have seen it, but I think it's also one that people have, like, only seen maybe once or twice, and, like, whenever I hear people say that they've also seen it, I'm like, oh my god.
Your ears perk up, and you're yeah. Like...
So, premise of Robots, they're, the main character, what's his name? Something, is it Copperbottom? Rodney yeah. Copperbottom. That's the main guy's name. So, he's this blue robot, and he wants to become an inventor. Oh my god, meet the Robinsons. So he, when he was growing up, him and his dad used to watch, this other robot, Big World, on TV, and he's, like, this big inventor, and so Rodney would be like, oh, I want to be, like, Big World when I grow up and be an inventor. So he grows up, and when he's an adult, he's like, I'm going to go to
the big city,
which is, I don't remember, but that's where Big World is. So he's like, I'm going to show Big World my invention, and maybe he'll hire me, and, like, I can become an inventor. Little does he know that the Big World Corporation has been taken over by this evil robot. His name is something that I don't remember. But he wants to turn Big World Corporation into, like,
new
these
parts.
New parts. Oh, yeah. Shoot. What's that meme where it's like, I want to say it all the time, like, I want to reference it all the time, but now yeah. I can't reference it.
Something people.
Oh, my God. That's going to really bother me. I'll try and think of it as I'm talking. But essentially, since the company's been taken over and it's not really about inventing anymore, when Rodney shows up, he's like, his face, or they like laugh in his face, specifically this one like weird little door robot laughs in his face and turns him away. And so he's like, well, what am I going to do now? He ends up running into this red robot who, is he voiced by Robin Williams?
I think so, yeah.
And so that's kind of like who Rodney ends up befriending in Robots. In the movie, and I honestly like don't remember. I think he like wants to find Big World himself and be like, if anyone's gonna turn me away, it's gonna be Big World. So he goes out to find Big World, eventually figures out that Big World's not even in charge of the company, so they want to help restore Big World's power. Meanwhile, the evil robot guy is trying to rid the streets of old parts and old robots, so they need to stop him. Again, another iconic scene when they're all fighting at the end, like, the good guys versus the bad guys. It's, like, got the red robot guy, whose name I don't remember right now. But it's, like, Hit Me Baby One More Time. Like, it plays that yeah. during that scene. Like, iconic.
When there's a good music to movie scene combination.
And it's, like, a battle scene. Like, it really just it hits the spot. And I also, unfortunately, cannot remember the thing that I reference all the time.
I'm even trying to look it up.
Which is unfortunate. I do think it's like blank people.
Oh! Which is why I'm like, how can it be so hard to remember what it was?
Okay. Well, unless it pops in my head in the next like 2 minutes as we're closing this episode out, you guys will have to let me know what it is if you've seen it. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Let us know if you also have any of these movies as like your top favorites. If there is one that, like, you're waiting for us to say this entire time, please comment your own favorite movies. And, yeah. Is there anything else you need to add, except unless you magically
I cannot find the quote. I'll find it, like, within 5 minutes of finishing this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We think it's fun to talk about movies, so hopefully you enjoyed. Maybe our summaries were good enough that you were like, okay, I think I'm going to go watch that. Or if you found that you agreed that a lot of, if you think we have great movie taste, then you just got a whole bunch of recommendations if by some chance you have not seen the entire list. So, we will talk to you guys next Thursday.
Bye.